confident. She calls Dane a decomposing turd without blinking. Without knowing it, she calls me a lab pet. Why am I so drawn to someone who could destroy me? Why do I need her to be my friend? The dictionary says my identity should be all about being separate or distinct, and yet it feels like it is so wrapped up in others. The unknowable. Are there some things I will never know? The unanswerable I will have to accept? Have I changed the way everyone does? Time and events molding me? Or am I a new Jenna, the product of technology, changed by what was put in, or maybe what was left out? And if my original 10% really is enough, what if it had been 9%? Or 8? Is one numeral that different from another? When is a cell finally too small to hold our essence? Even 500 billion neurochips aren't telling me, and I'm not sure they ever will. The question that twists inside me again and again, am I enough? I realize for the first time, is not just my question, but was the old Jenna's question as well. And I think about Ethan and Alice and even Dane, and I wonder, has it ever been their own question too? Environment. I'm leaving to pick up your father. I'll be back soon, Claire calls from the bottom of the stairs. I hear her leave. The house is empty. Lily has gone to Sunday Mass. I've never been left home alone before. Are they beginning to trust me? I look out the window at the veranda below. The railings have all been replaced, and the brick walls repaired. The Cotswold is beginning to look more like a house and less like a ruin. Claire's magic is working. Day by day it improves. The upstairs rooms remain empty, but they're at least clean now, the spiderwebs all swiped away. I've been cleaning my own room today. Claire does not employ housekeepers anymore, not like she did in Boston. She does not want prying eyes or ears. When a workman must come inside, she follows him and hovers. Not a minute is given for free wandering. There's not much to clean. My room is still sparse. It is life near the bone where it is sweetest, I say to the walls. I amuse myself with my cleverness. I run a cloth over my desk and chair and I'm done. I pick up my copy of Walden, now uploaded word for word into my biochips, but there's still something different about opening a real book, the scent that emerges, seeing one word at a time and soaking in its shape and nuance. I wonder about things like the sounds and scents that surrounded Thoreau as he wrote each sentence and paragraph. Turning pages, feeling the paper, I wonder if any of the trees from Thoreau's forest are still alive. I wonder what Thoreau would think today if he could visit my small pond and eucalyptus grove. I wonder if, unlike Thoreau, 200 years from now I might still be able to visit my pond and forest. When I turn the pages of the book and read the words and the spaces between, I have time to think about these things. Thoughts like these are not written down or uploaded into my biogel. These thoughts are mine alone and no one else's. They exist nowhere else in the universe but within me. I'm stopped by this new thought. What if I had never had the chance to collect and build new memories? Before I can think what I'm saying, I hear myself whispering, "Thank you," to the air. I am thankful, grateful, in spite of the cost, to be here. Have I forgotten the hell I traveled? Or are these new memories a cushion softening its sharpness? I return Walden to the center of my desk and take my dust cloth to my closet to drop it in the laundry bin. Claire will probably be home soon. I glance at the corner of my closet. The key. Almost forgotten. I am chilled again, remembering Father's face when I mentioned it. I bend down and pull back the corner of carpet. It's still there, and I snatch it into my fist like it might disappear. I walk to the top of the stairs and lean over the banister. Claire? Lily? Here, Jenna. I startle, almost dropping the key. I freeze on the landing, listening. But the house is quiet. Was it only a voice I remember? I grip the key, stepping on the first stair. I already know what is in Mother's closet. Only computers. But it was dark. Maybe there was something else I didn't notice. What would Father be afraid for me to see? Something pounds within me. Something at my core. But I know it is not a heart. I take another step, and another, until I am standing at Mother's door. After the strides we have made, the tender moments we have shared, is this betrayal? I look over my shoulder, back down the long, empty hallway. Mother? My voice is strung tight. Hearing it deepens the pounding within. The walls of the hallway pulse with the stillness. I push open her door. The room is bright, airy. Nothing to be afraid of. I walk in, hearing the awkward shuffle of my feet on the floor. Jenna. I stop. My breath catches again, and my nails dig into my palm. I step closer to the closet. I remember the worried flash of Father's eyes again, and I thrust the key into the lock, turning the bolt, throwing the door open. The table is still there, and the computers, and the faint green glow. This time I find the light switch on the outside wall, and I push it on. I walk in. The room is ordinary. The walls plain. I look at the floor, the ceiling, under the table. There's nothing else in here but the three computers. Mine is still in the middle, one of the bolts still loose. I step forward and almost touch it, but pull back. I don't remember having my own computer in Boston, but I must have had one because my name is clearly marked on the side panel. The computer is large and oddly shaped, not like any I've ever seen. A 6-inch square with 2 ports, both unused. There is no monitor. This has to be it. This is what they don't want me to see. I stand there staring, trying to decide. Trust them? Or trust a whisper inside of me? If I could get it loose, I could connect it to my netbook upstairs and see what it contains. I reach down and touch my fingertips to my name. Jenna Angeline Fox. My fingers tingle. Why here? The other two don't have labels. Maybe they're mine too? I lay my hand on the first one. Now! Hurry! I jerk away. My head pounds. I touch the second computer, wondering at its purpose. And then I squat. There are labels. Faint and hastily scrawled with a pen. L. Jenkins and K. Manning. What? My knees buckle and I fall to the floor. What are... How... Why did... My thoughts trip and cut one another off. I stand up and step back, looking at the three oddly shaped boxes. Why would Mother and Father have their computers? I run from the closet down the hallway to the kitchen, where Lily keeps a drawer of basic tools. I rummage through for a screwdriver. There is no question now. I know who to trust. I find a large, flat screwdriver and run back across the house to Mother's room. Mine first, then the others. I'll connect them all to my netbook. I'll upload the contents and see for myself. I'll upload... I stop midway down the hallway. I see Father's eyes. Mother's desperate glance. A dark, locked closet and hidden key. Upload. We cracked the code, Jenna. The screwdriver slips from my fingers. Nanobots the size of blood cells are injected, sometimes even without a person's knowledge. My feet stumble forward. Think of a glass ball twirling on your fingertip. The walls sway. Mother's door looms. The mind is an energy that the brain produces. I grip the frame of the closet door to steady myself. You have to keep it spinning, or it falls and shatters. I stare at the three humming boxes. We upload those bits of information into an environment that allows that energy to keep spinning. Correction. Environment. I stare at three humming boxes. black environments. Hell. Hurry, Jenna. Come. I can't. I back away. Backups. Of course. And I run. Shared thoughts. The floor of the forest is damp. The blanket of eucalyptus leaves rustles beneath me. I've been lying here for hours, listening to the sounds. There are few. The leaves swishing beneath me when I turn my head or move a leg. The sighing creak of branches and limbs when the breeze pushes them farther than they want to go. The occasional hollow caw of one raven to another. The faint, desperate cry of Claire calling, Jenna! Wondering where I have gone. I hold my hands above me, my fingers fanning out in a delicate performance, my palms coming together, warm and smooth. It is real skin, real movement. The structure listens to my neurochips. When I think, clap, my hands obey, and the frenzied claps echo through the forest. My brain. I do have 10%. The butterfly, Mother called it. My winged bit of humanity. A few ounces at most. If I believe in such a thing as a soul, did it take flight with a glistening handful of tissue? Does the soul cling to the last vestige of humanity until there is no more? If a soul can reside in a fistful of embryo, why not in a fistful of white matter? I cup my palm, imagining a butterfly landing in it, feeling the flutter in life, and I go to a sleeping, remembering dream world. I dream of golden-winged butterflies, red skirts, lopsided cakes, and Ethan's mouth on my own. When I wake, the rickrack of sky visible above the canopy is gone from cerulean to black. The tops of the trees are barely visible, only a sliver of moon to light their edges. Jenna! Mother's distant, searching voice is pitiful. I have to go back, eventually, but not until I understand one thing. Which is the real me? The one in the closet, or the one here on the forest floor? Back up. They are sitting on the veranda as they emerge from the forest. Leaving the back door open as I ran out must have given them a clue to my direction. In another time, Mother would have called the police by now, but that's not an option anymore. Mother is the first to see me. She begins to stand, but Father reaches out and she sits again. Lily sips a glass of wine. Walking toward them, I feel like I'm interrupting a candlelit dinner party instead of a frightened vigil. Lily passes Mother a platter of stuffed mushrooms. I feel an annoyed ruffle run through me.
It's a little late, don't you think? Father says casually. He takes a bite of cheese and then nonchalantly washes it down with a swig of wine. His eyes are angry, glassy, but his movements are practiced restraint.
Not too late, I answer.
We can't keep living this way, Jenna, Mother blurts out.
Father shoots her a glance. Lily rolls her eyes.
Welcome home, Father, I say.
I reach out for a mushroom, and before anyone can stop me, I pop it in my mouth. All three stare at me, the impervious Jenna Fox, at the center of attention once again.
Where are the cameras? I play the scene with an exaggerated bow.
Damn it, Jenna! Father slams his hand down on the glass tabletop, rattling the dishes.
You're not the first person in the world to have to deal with a disabling accident.
I know, Father. I sit down in the chair opposite him. There's those three people in the closet, too. The ones in the black boxes? Now that's what I call a disability.
Lily grunts.
Touché.
And she downs the rest of her wine.
Jenna, we have to talk about these things, Mother says. You can't just run off and worry us every time you hit a bump.
I didn't hit a bump. You both hid it from me.
They aren't people. Father says.
Have another, Lily offers, holding out the platter of mushrooms to me.
We didn't hide it from you, Mother says. Did you hear me? Behind a locked door is hidden.
Shall I open another bottle?
What do you expect when you're acting like this? Stop!